Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and have managed to avoid the attention of any demonic beings thus far. My name is Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea lair for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. I hope the spiral stairs didn't make you feel dizzy on the way up the lighthouse, but I do think the view of the sea is worth it, don't you? Look at it, stretching out for miles, like a million diamonds scattered on blue silk woven by the gods. I think a 360-degree view is a must for all secret tea lairs, actually. If you look to the left, you can see the coast of Cornwall, and if you look through that brass telescope, you can see the echoes of my childhood. Do sit down. It may be a bit of a squeeze in here, but at least we'll be cosy.
I'm sorry to disturb you, ma'am, but your guest has arrived. A Miss Sarah Pinborough.
Oh, marvellous. Let's see her calling card. Sarah Jane of Ealing, solitary adventurer, kind to cats. Is something wrong, Latimer?
You know how I feel about cats, ma'am. I still remember the way that tabby...
Not now, Latimer. Do show her in. For those of you who don't know, Sarah Pinborough writes horror, thriller, and fairy tale-esque novels, has had short stories published in several anthologies, and won the British Fantasy Award for Best Novella in 2010. Not only that, Sarah is also a screenwriter and has written for the BBC.
Miss Sarah Pinborough, ma'am.
Hello, Sarah. Do come and sit down.
How are you?
I'm good. It was a bit of a climb upstairs, though, and sitting down would be good because I'm not that great with heights.
Well, yes, I actually find heights quite difficult as well, but with the lighthouse being such a kind of solid building, I feel quite safe inside.
Yeah, and the view's great.
It is. It's wonderful, isn't it? Would you like a slice of Victoria sponge?
I'd love one, please. Could I have a large one?
Yes, you can. I want to say for now, but I shouldn't. Would you like some tea?
I would love some tea.
And how do you take it?
White, no sugar, please.
Ah, the way of kings, or should I say queens. I'll pour. So, in my invitation, and I should note that I haven't blindfolded you because I trust you. I had to blindfold Chuck when I had him brought to my volcanic lair, but I feel like...
That's a whole different story, by the sound of it.
Yes. So I asked in my invitation if you could bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
Well, I have brought an orrery, which, as we have discovered, is difficult to say. They're kind of a thing that I don't understand fully, but I really like the look of. And they are mechanical devices which show the planets and the sun and the earth all moving around each other. And I only came across them because there is a restaurant in Marylebone called the Orrery. And when it first opened way back in the 90s, I had to book a table there. And I thought, who would call? Why is it called that? And then someone told me what it was. I thought, for some reason, I thought it was something to do with bird cages. It just sounded aviary-ish to me, which is another word I can't say.
That's another word, yeah. I can't say orrery. So I think Latimer will have to say it for me if I want to say it again. So this place, this restaurant, the Orrery, did it have one there in the restaurant?
I don't remember that it did.
That's no good.
It was one of those restaurants that took about a year to get into when you finally booked, and, you know, there was always a waiting list. It was a Conran restaurant. It must have had one.
I'd be very disappointed if it didn't.
I know. I don't think until I left it, until I'd left, I'd found out what they were, and so I don't think I looked.
Ah, fair enough.
I was only about 25 at the time.
Have you seen The Dark Crystal?
Years ago. A long, long time ago.
There's a super giant one in there that the hero clambers over to escape from evil beasties. Yeah, so if you're a fan of such things, it's a fantastical...
Orrery. I mean, we should come to the West Country and just go, orrery.
Orrery. I live in the West Country, so I should... I was born in Cornwall. I should be able to
get those R's.
Orrery.
I used them in my YA books. There was a room with loads of them in the sort of hero's house. But I find them a bit magical without being at all magical.
Yes, I see what you mean. Though I really pity your audiobook narrator, if that's yeah. narrated for that scene. That would be, I'm actually breaking into a sweat just thinking about the prospect of it. How awful. Well, that's lovely. Well, let's put that on the table.
You can keep that as a gift.
Can I? Oh, that's so kind. Thank you. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. It says on your calling card, a solitary adventurer. So as a solitary adventurer, your bravery is beyond question.
Obviously.
But is there anything you've done that has really scared you?
Oh, gosh. That's a tricky question. I don't do things that are traditionally scary. Like, I don't do roller coasters, and I don't do that, you know, adventure daring scary stuff, because it just scares me too much. I don't see why I would want to put myself in physical jeopardy. And I, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't do fairgrounds and stuff, so I never really got on those rides young, which I think you have to, because once you're old enough to realise that they're hurtling you around at great rate of knots, you know, that's not so good for your health. I'm trying to think what I've done that's really scary. You know, I'm quite an upfront person, so situations don't scare me very much, and standing my ground on things doesn't scare me very much. I have done a couple of scary things, but I think that for legal purposes, I can't talk about
them. Well, those sound like the best kind of scary things. Perhaps we'll have to find a quiet nook.
Yeah,
some other time.
A bar sometime, over a sort of a tea, perhaps laced with brandy or something.
That sounds marvellous.
Hmm.
So I'd like to think that everyone has a guilty pleasure. Do you? What's yours?
I am a guilty pleasure. a guilty pleasure. I, on a basic level, pick and mix with my guilty pleasure. I'm a real food freak. I had some eating problems in my 20s. And so I'm very, you know, calorie aware. I'm a lot better than I used to be. But I do, you know, I think food is my guilty pleasure, which is wrong on many levels. And taking time out from work and just sitting down and watching movies and reading. I sound really dull when I'm saying it like this.
No, you don't sound dull. You said pick and mix. Pick and mix is inherently exciting.
I know. You can't go wrong with a bag of pick and mix and a movie on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Preferably with a man.
Is there a film that you know you shouldn't love so much, but you always have to watch it when it comes on the telly? Perhaps you even own it, but every time it comes on, it's like, oh!
It was The Witches of Eastwick.
I love that
film. I know, it's just great, isn't it? It used to be when I was a student, it was my ironing film when I was at my mum's, and she'd say, you know, do the ironing, would always be The Witches of Eastwick. And this is a terrible one, because it's so not like anything I ever, 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 ever watch. And the rest of the world loathes it with a passion. But
ooh, a guilty pleasure as well, go on.
Mamma Mia.
I haven't seen that.
Oh my god, it's a truly appalling film. I think it probably helps I watched it first time under the influence of many mojitos with two other girls, and I resisted watching it because I really like horror and sci-fi, and you know, and then I was singing along and you know, up and dancing.
Oh the horror.
I know, I was having fun.
not to Mamma Mia.
I know.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I love Meryl Streep, and it was light and it was fun, you know, and I spend so much time, you know, like yourself, writing about dark things, and it's just a fun film. You have to watch it, and then you can pity me along with everybody else.
I think it, because it's one of those kind of light, fun films, that's why I haven't watched it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I always say I don't like rom-coms until I watch one.
No, I can't. I can't do that. I wouldn't say watched. I've endured several rom-coms, and I just don't have the genetic material, I don't think.
Which is interesting, because you're happily married and I'm the single girl about town, and yet I will quite happily sit through Love Actually.
You see, that's another one that I haven't been able to bring myself to watch, mostly because of the title, Love Actually. I thought the no, no, no.
Oh, you see, no, it's a good one. Everyone else hates it apart from me. But it is a good film. I won't watch like light and fluffy rom-coms, but I do quite like ones with good cast. I'm trying to embrace my inner girl.
Okay. I mostly keep mine locked in a closet. So one day we'll make our peace with each other. So I asked on the Twitters what people would like to talk to you about.
God.
And a startling number of them said wine.
I know, it's odd, isn't it? But can I point out that we are drinking tea?
We are drinking tea, and I have to say that I have got the idea that you're partial to a glass or three. Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, it is and it isn't. Yes, I am. I mean, I overplay it a bit on Twitter. You know, I put a lot of ice in my wine.
Ice?
Because I don't have the hugest alcohol. I think in my head I have a massive alcohol tolerance. In reality, this is not the case.
Reality often disappoints.
I know. So, yeah, I mean, I do like a glass of wine. I mean, my current flatmate and I, his downfall is chocolate and mine is wine. So whenever he's stressed, he's like, oh, I could eat some chocolate. Whenever I'm stressed, which is most days, mm-hmm. and he'll be like, Sarah, it's only 4 o'clock. Do you think you should be having that glass of wine? But I don't drink half as much as I make out I drink. You know,
that's
a couple of glasses every other day, about it.
So people often talk about embarrassing things they've done when they're drunk, but I don't want to do that. I'd like to ask you...
I had an awful moment there.
No, no, we're having a nice cup of tea together. Why on earth would I want to embarrass you? Now, what I'd like to ask you is, what's the thing you were most proud of doing when you were under the influence?
Ah, okay. Probably just about every panel I've ever done. And I'm actually quite proud of... I mean, it's not a thing to be proud of at all, but it does make me laugh, and it's one of life's little stories. It was when I was about 18 and I'd had a few glasses of wine, and the fashion of the time were those sort of T-shirt material skirts that were really long and elasticated waist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember those, but they were very kind of gothy.
Yes.
And I had one of those on and like a hipster belt and a shirt, and I'd had some wine with a friend of mine, and she was dropping me at the pub. And all cool boys were sitting outside the pub. And so I got out of her Mini, I remember it well, in Edinburgh, and I slammed the door in my drunken, confident flounce, and she started to drive away, which was fine, apart from my skirt was stuck in the and all my drunken confidence of facing the hot boys suddenly faded into my skirt. It just slides further down my body, and I'm just running alongside the car, banging on it to hold on to my skirt. And she eventually stopped, but by which point my pants are very, very much on show. So whenever, the great thing about that story is whenever I do something horrendously embarrassing while drunk, I always think, you know, hopefully it's never going to be as bad as showing my pants to the... And, you know, the thing is, I wasn't a skinny teenager. So it wasn't like I showed my pants to the world while looking like Cameron Diaz. Like, they were big pants for a big girl.
That's brilliant.
So, you know, it's nothing to be proud of, but at the same time...
You survived.
I survived, and nothing hopefully will ever be that embarrassing again.
I like that. I will always think about that. Maybe next time I'm in an embarrassing situation, I'll think, well, at least it isn't.
Exactly. I like it's my gift to the world.
Yes, yes. We can all have that to compare our embarrassments against. So recently, you have been doing all the book launches. All the book launches in the Western Hemisphere, it seems.
I own all the books.
So Poison and Mayhem, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so... With Poison, the best thing ever is that it elicited a review in The Sun that made them use the phrase gender politics.
I know, about me as well. I mean, there must have been proper feminists rolling over and dying. You know, I mean, I am a feminist, obviously, because I'm a woman, but at the same time, you know, I'm not, I'm quite an individualist feminist, if I'm honest. Not something that really, I don't get my knickers in a twist about it. Mm. So, yeah, I love that they opened with sex in capital letters and then ended with gender politics. But I have amended my Twitter bio to now say, heavily featured sex, The Sun.
With Mayhem, I was reading up a bit about these torso murders. They're fascinating.
I know. It was like a gift from God when I found them online. Because especially with the backdrop of Jack the Ripper, they were going on at the same time, and the same policeman, the same, you know, police surgeon, and just such a gruesome, you know, series of murders to be going on that no one seems to know about.
I guess Jack the Ripper overshadowed everything.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think, you know, his victims had names and they were found in obvious places, and he suddenly had that nickname, you know, so he became sort of infamous. and the Thames Torso killer kind of got ignored, God bless him.
So did they have any idea of who he is? Because I saw something about kind of surgical cuts that seemed to be someone who knew.
Yeah, I mean, they said the same thing about Jack the Ripper, but no, they had, the files don't even exist anymore, I think. A lot of the files have been destroyed, but they didn't even have suspects with him. There was, you know, they had no victim. They had one victim they could identify from clothing. So they had no location of death for any of them. So only one had an identity. So they really had nothing to go on. And so some of the police tried to lump them in with the Jack the Ripper killings, you know,
mm-hmm.
to sort of make it look like they were only chasing one man. But they're such different modus operandi, as it were, that clearly not the same man.
Good grief.
Mm.
Gruesome.
Yeah, the river's taken a lot of blood in its time.
Yes, yes. The Thames is quite a fascinating
entity. Totally fascinated by it. It tends to feature in, you know, it featured in my YA books. It's definitely, you know, mayhem and murder are very Thames heavy. Quite fascinated by the Thames.
Well, the Victoria sponge has almost gone. The teapot is empty.
And it was delicious.
I'll be sure to tell Latimer. I'm sure he'll be pleased. It's been a delight to have you here today.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely to see you.
We shall see each other again, I'm sure.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Bye.
This way, Miss Pimbera.
Well, what a refreshing visitor, wouldn't you say, Latimer?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's wave her off as she crosses the causeway. Will she make it to shore before the tide comes in? Actually, Latimer, there wasn't a causeway there yesterday. However did you make one so swiftly?
Turtles, ma'am. I make it my business to never travel anywhere without a bale of specially trained turtles.
Oh, I see you strapped rocks to their backs. Oh dear, they seem to be swimming away, and she's not even halfway across. How unfortunate. Why is she flapping her arm like a chicken?
I believe she's activating an inflation mechanism strapped under her armpit. But I'm not sure what exactly she's... Oh!
Why are you turning away, Latimer? You're blushing! It said in your resume that you never blush.
But, ma'am, I believe she is inflating her bloomers.
How thrilling. I wager you didn't see anything like that in Burma.
Indeed not, ma'am.
She's throwing something in the water.
I believe those are mint imperials, ma'am. She must have adventured in the Galapagos Islands.
I think you're impressed, Latimer. You're not developing a crush, are you?
Ma'am.
She's coaxing the turtle she's lying on towards the shore with the mints. Well, I'm impressed. I must get a pair of those bloomers. I should imagine they're rather refreshing. She reached the shore. Heavens, they deflate afterwards. How practical. She'll be home in time for dinner. Well, dear guests, thank you for joining the resourceful Sarah Pinborough and I today. The next time we take tea together, we'll be joined by Paul Cornell. Last week, I asked for advice on what to do should I spot a suspicious limb floating past on the Thames whilst taking tea with an old friend. What creative and sensitive souls you are, dear listeners. I agreed with the suggestion to remark upon the weather instead, a pillar of British conversation after all, and enjoyed the idea of furnishing Latimer with a school of piranha, ready to devour any other limbs spotted in the future. However, I'd like to raise my teacup in respect to Dom Camus, who suggested the following. Seeing a severed leg floating down the Thames is frankly a relief compared to some of the other things it has in it. Nonetheless, one can't allow guests to become embarrassed. The correct response is to turn to one's guest, smiling, perhaps rolling one's eyes just a little, and remark, "Ha! For a moment there I thought that was a severed leg. I should get some new spectacles." No matter how sharp the guest's eyes may be, English etiquette does not permit contradiction, and therefore you are both safe from any further conversational awkwardness. Ah, the simple joy of using etiquette to protect oneself from further embarrassment. You have earned my respect, sir. Before Latimer shows you out, via the safe route, of course, I have another question for you. I understand there's a strange chap who has the habit of landing his large blue police box on people's lawns. I do like to be prepared for difficult social situations, so I wanted to ask you what you would do if this bizarre vehicle landed in your garden. All suggestions are welcome, particularly the outlandish and comedic. Do be dears, and leave your answers at www.teaandjeopardy.com. I'll pick the best one and share it with you the next time we take tea. Well, until next time, my puddings. Now, Latimer, after you've shown them out, we need to talk about these stairs. They just won't do. Find a new location for the secret lair, would you? Perhaps somewhere with a lift.
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman on the Geek Planet Online Network. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find out more and join in.